Hello and welcome to Safari Conversations, the Singita podcast. Even though we've been around for 30 years, we're relatively new to podcasting. But we are storytellers by nature and we've got so much to share with you. Alongside our conservation partners, we've been busy exploring and protecting Africa's wilderness. So join us as we unpack inspiring, fun, and sometimes crazy stories where you'll meet our incredible people and learn all about the special places in Africa that we call home. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, please subscribe so you don't miss out on future episodes.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Safari Conversations. My name is Lucy. I'm a guide at Singida Sabi Sand, and today we're going to be talking about pangolins. They're amazing little creatures. If you don't know what they are, today's a great episode to find out everything from what they are to what's happening to them. I've been very fortunate in my career to see them both in the Kalahari and the Congo Basin. It's an absolute privilege to see them, and something I've always found incredible is wherever I've seen them, I've also seen incredible humans doing incredible things to try save this species. And today we are going to be talking to Pangolin Africa, an organization doing exactly that. So welcome, Donald Davis. Maybe you can introduce yourself and tell us more about your program.
Hello, and thank you for having me. My name is Donald Davis, and I am the program coordinator at Pangolin Africa, and I run the Pangolin Guardians program. So I also started my career as a guide, and I guided for about 9 years in Southern Africa before I got the wonderful opportunity to start working with pangolins, mainly doing rescue and rehabilitation of pangolins rescued from the illegal trade. And now my job is to spread that awareness and as much knowledge as I can to as many people to try help save species.
Amazing. I think for today's episode, you speak about spreading awareness. The biggest one is for many people, they don't know what a pangolin is. So maybe you can start off with explaining to us a little bit about this incredible little creature.
Definitely. So for most people, yeah, as soon as they hear pangolins, they ask, well, what is a pangolin? And we get 8 different species of pangolin throughout the world, 4 in Asia, 4 in Africa, and 3 of the species in Africa live in tropical rainforests, and they can be quite small, like the white and black belly pangolins, which weigh roughly around 3 kilograms, so quite small mammals. And then they get quite big as well, so the giant pangolin gets up to about 30 kilograms, and the really old ones maybe even potentially 40 kilograms. And we also in Africa have Temex pangolin or Cape pangolin, which occurs in eastern and southern Africa, and they're the ones people are normally most familiar with, and they normally get up to around 9 kilograms or so. They're very unique mammals. They are completely covered in scales. So if you are lucky enough to ever see a pangolin, you're never going to forget it, and you're not going to mistake it for anything else. They are one of a kind. There's nothing else that looks quite like them, and they're very funny, odd animals with quite a long tail and very long tongues that can be almost the length of their body, and they primarily eat ants and termites, and they use that very long tongue, the sticky tongue, just to lap up ants and termites. So very interesting, unique mammals, which very few people have seen.
Amazing, Donald. And maybe we can also talk a little bit about how did you find yourself in this career? What is happening to the pangolins, and why do they need rescuing and rehabilitation?
Pangolins are considered to be the most trafficked mammals on the planet. They are all threatened, all 8 species throughout the world. And without awareness, we don't really have much of a chance of saving them. So they are trafficked in Asia and in Africa. And in the past 10 years, we've seen a major increase in the number of pangolins that are being trafficked from Africa across to Asia to try feed a demand. And that demand comes from traditional cultural medicine, which has been practiced for hundreds, if not thousands of years. And it is also eaten as a delicacy in some areas as well. Unfortunately, the rate that they're being harvested and exploited is not sustainable, and numbers are dropping rapidly. So if we don't do something, unfortunately, they will all go extinct. Now, for some pangolins, they do get rescued from the black market trade, and the lucky few that are alive get to be treated, and then we try rewild them and reintroduce them back into the wild, which is how I initially got started in pangolin conservation, helping out with that rehab process.
And maybe you can explain to us, so the animals are being trafficked. You mentioned bush meat, which is the actual meat of the animal, but they are also being trafficked for medicinal purposes, as you mentioned, and that's for the scales. So the scales are just keratin, the same as rhino horn and your hair and your nails, correct?
So pangolin scales, yep, they're made of keratin, just like your hair and nails, like rhino horn. They have a slightly different structure to rhino horn, whereas rhino horn is a bit more like compressed hair. Pangolin scales are a little bit more similar to primate nails, but keratin, it doesn't do anything for us, unfortunately. There's no medicinal benefits. Any effects are placebo effects.
It's very sad to hear species getting harvested to the point of extinction when there's no scientific backing for their harvesting. There's no scientific evidence that these scales hold medicinal purposes. So I think that links back a lot to what I believe you're trying to do with teaching people about pangolins. If you don't know about them, you don't care about them and you can't really spread the word. So for me, even as a guide, there are so many questions that we have about these animals. It's not easy to access information about them. I know that Pangolin Africa released a video called The Eye of the Pangolin, and that really inspired me years ago to, before I'd ever seen a pangolin, to learn more about them. So, I think some of the questions that come up in these conversations, maybe you don't even have a straight answer for or a perfect answer for. And I think that comes back to the need for more research and more protection for these animals. Information and research are constantly evolving. How are these conservation efforts progressing?
So there's always a need for more research with pangolin conservation, and this comes from their life habits. We don't even fully understand how long pangolins live. We don't know how often they really give birth to pups. We don't understand how often those pups survive. And when it comes to the illegal trade as well, we don't fully understand the smuggling routes and exactly how many pangolins are being poached from the wild, where they're going to. Basically, every avenue always needs more research and information for pangolins, unfortunately. Because they're such shy and secretive creatures, it's very difficult to research them without disturbing them.
So some of the practices that I've heard about is pangolin fences. I've also seen programs which tag the pangolins. How does that help the species?
So currently, we do support and work with people who are trying to develop pangolin-safe fences. So, pangolins in southern Africa, in South Africa particularly, you're looking at about 1,000 pangolins a year die from electric fences. So, there's a great need to develop a fence that is safe for pangolins while still doing its job as a fence. That could save many, many pangolins over the years if we can figure out how to do that. When it comes to tagging and monitoring pangolins, this is generally the way that we start to establish research on their home ranges, their movements, their activity times. And this is done quite a bit when we do rehabilitation and release on pangolins, as we can also make sure that the rehabilitation we're doing and the releases that we're doing are successful. So in my career, for example, I have tagged and monitored 14 pangolins and monitored those pangolins, some of them giving birth, and monitored their home ranges and their territories and their interactions with predators and things like that. And this information all just adds little pieces to the puzzle and helps us fully understand pangolins' lifestyles, and that might help us discover something that is key to the survival of the species.
People hear about these big animals and conservation areas protecting animals such as elephants and rhinos. And even without knowing, often they are also protecting the ecosystems of these smaller mammals like pangolin. So I find it amazing that the management practices, as the research develops and evolves, so does the management practices to try include these smaller mammals. So that gives a lot of hope. I think sometimes we get overwhelmed with stories of doom and gloom, but it's amazing to hear about projects which are working towards, the protection of these animals. And you mentioned partner programs. So if someone was interested in your projects, maybe you could tell us a little bit more about the projects that you are working on currently, or the ones that you think are very important to keep pushing forward.
So our main project is the Pangolin Guardians Program, and this is something that anyone can do and anyone can participate in. And it's just education, and it's a short course that's suitable for all ages. And it just gives people a general education on pangolins, a general understanding of their threats and what to do if they come across a pangolin. And that awareness has a huge impact to furthering research. The more people that are aware of what a pangolin is and that they're in trouble, the more support research gets.
At Sangeeta, we do have a learner management system where we have different courses, and we have your pangolin course, which I took. I found it absolutely fascinating, and I know lots of the staff members here have also taken it, and it's absolutely sparked conversation even within communities who've been living in these areas their whole lives for the most part. As well as, I recently had a young guest, and it was one of those drives, as you would know, Donald, where, you know, they say, what else is there to see? Have we seen everything? And I said, no, you haven't even come close to seeing everything. You know, there are these incredible animals that exist, even if we don't get to see them. Something like a pangolin, and this boy's eyes lit up, and he said to me that he was going to go and do your pangolin guardian course. So that's one extra pangolin guardian. But I think that's an amazing way to approach it. And it's not always easy to spread awareness about animals that we don't get to see. So we at Sangeeta, we've recently added these conservation rooms to our lodges. And something I'm really looking forward to doing is getting some of your pangolin facts up in there so that guests can also start interacting with these creatures without seeing them and becoming aware of their plight.
Any space that leads to more awareness and more publicity about pangolins is always a major benefit. It really can't be understated how everyone can participate and be a part of this. So whether that's through conservation rooms and people like yourself telling your guests and your clients about pangolins, or people can always go to Pangolin Africa, do the course themselves. It's for free online, and they can learn more about pangolins that way.
What would it mean to lose pangolins? I know it's very difficult. There are many gaps. But what do we believe, what do we perceive that impact to be, losing an animal like a pangolin out of an ecosystem?
All animals have their own role, their own niche in the ecosystem. So as soon as you remove one animal from that ecosystem, there are always impacts. For pangolins, they act as a source of population control for ants and termites. And also through the act of digging up nests and digging burrows, this aerates the soil, this provides other resources and food sources for other animals as well. And the impact that pangolins have on the environment in relation to their body size is pretty significant. So they're not a very population-dense animal, but they do have an impact on the ecosystem, and it is, relative to their size, quite important. And you also have the cultural aspects as well. So here in Africa, pangolins play a major role in cultural society, whether that's African traditional medicine. They are important things in many rituals. There's many beliefs surrounding pangolins. So if we lost the species, there would be an impact to the ecosystem, and we would lose part of that cultural heritage as well that we wouldn't be able to get back if they go extinct.
You speak about beliefs, Donald, and there's amazing beliefs about them being special creature, but there are also some beliefs such as the medicinal purposes, which how does the future look for that? Is this something that the older generations are believing, or do you believe that going forward, the younger generations will take into consideration these species going extinct?
So going forward in the future, I do think the younger generations are very important to conservation. So educating young minds who then go home and spread that knowledge to their household as well, and it filters up through society. When it comes to the practice of traditional medicine, rituals and beliefs, these are important sort of cultural aspects, and it's important to keep as much cultural heritage as we possibly can, but ultimately we do need to save pangolins. So unfortunately, the use of pangolin scales and pangolin products and poaching of pangolins is currently illegal in South Africa. If maybe one day we can find a way to support those beliefs while saving pangolins, that would be great. But unfortunately, if pangolins go extinct, then also those beliefs disappear as well. So the first thing we need to do is save pangolins. And I do think the younger generations are very important.
I know as Sangeeta, we do also do eco lessons where we reach out and we work alongside communities, and we do also focus a lot on that younger generation, like you mentioned, carrying that legacy forward and protecting and preserving those areas for many years to come. I think you're absolutely right about reaching out to the younger generations and building that belief and conservation ethos all the way through to the surrounding communities. I know as Sangeeta, we do a lot of work in the communities with the younger people. And how are you reaching out to that age group? How are you involving children in this plight?
Through the Pangolin Guardians program, we're always trying to spread the reach as wide as possible. So whether that's translating the program and the course into different languages, creating educational resources for children of different ages and adults and things like that. So we're always trying to spread that net as wide as possible to get young children education that is relevant to their age, but also ideally in their own local language as well. And in that way, you support education and also learning at the same time.
So whether it's working with children or guests, as a guide, as Sangeeta or an ecotourism company, we aim really to connect the source of the resource and get it through to as many different people as we can, whether it's people who are working alongside us or whether it's guests coming in from international countries. How do you think ecotourism plays a role in this greater conservation story?
So ecotourism, whether that comes to lodges and field guides, have a really important role in conservation. So not only do their efforts help fund reserves and keep them running and keep those areas protected, but as a field guide, we constantly share information out to people the whole time. And that message that we spread globally to people coming from all over the world spreads that conservation message to everyone. And that can't be underestimated how much of an impact that makes. It's teaching people ethics and letting them understand the issues and the potential solutions that we have in conservation.
We speak a lot here at Sangeeta about the wholeness of an experience. So whether guests are coming into the African bush for the first time or this is their 10th return trip, how do we really connect them to all the aspects, from hearing the water trickling over the boulders or, you know, the breeze through the leaves? We try to incorporate all of these things, and something that's really important to our job, we believe, is also the storytelling aspect. And that's where we can really bring alive these aspects that you can't see or touch on safari, something like a pangolin. So I think from our side as well, certainly we're going to try to bring that story home. So as a guide, we are experiencing people coming to Africa who really want a deeper experience. They don't just want to come here and tick the boxes. They want to really feel connected to the place. And we do that a lot through storytelling, whether it's sitting around a fire or just taking a moment of silence out there. Something like a pangolin is not an animal they're likely to see. So Don, maybe you can tell us a little bit about what it's like to actually see a pangolin and what impact that has had on you.
So I've been very fortunate to have spent a lot of time with pangolins, doing rehab and monitoring them after releases to see how they're doing. And they are fascinating animals. There's a reason why there's so many cultural beliefs around pangolins. They are very thought-provoking. You just want to sit and watch them. And for me personally, experiencing them and viewing them in the wild is truly remarkable. They are remarkable animals, all with their own different personalities. So you never quite know what you're going to see from a pangolin. Some are very shy. Sometimes they can be relaxed. Sometimes they can be playful. And sometimes they'll be just busy feeding and foraging, but being able to spend that time with them it's very special.
I've been very fortunate to see them in the wild, but it's always relatively briefly. We view them from a distance in their natural habitat as they move. I've seen them go over the red sands in the Kalahari or high up in the trees in the Congo Basin, just going about their business. But it's always quite a brief visual of them. And even that has been an absolute, privilege. But what have you experienced? You are one of the very few people who have spent extended amount of time during that rehabilitation process. You must have some amazing stories.
So I have been incredibly fortunate to have spent a lot of time with pangolins, mainly following them on foot and just observing them and seeing that they're doing okay in the environment. And this is once we've rehabilitated and rewild a pangolin, once we release it, we need to make sure we know the work that we've done is working and that the pangolin has rewilded and is doing well in the habitat. So I have had the opportunity to really start to experience how they live. And I say start because we don't know much, but every day monitoring a pangolin, you never know what you're going to see. And you could see completely new behaviors that no one can explain and no one else quite knows what's going on. So they are quite individual animals. They have their own unique personalities and they all like and prefer different habitats. And they're quite fussy eaters about what ants and termites they want to eat and what they want to do in particular days. For me personally, during my time monitoring my pangolins, my favorite moments are when they're playful. And this can be when they're rolling around in mud or swimming, which they're really quite good swimmers on a hot day. Or sometimes in summer, when you get those afternoon thunderstorms and that nice warm rain, they just play around, roll around and frolic and just generally very happy animals, happy creatures in that environment. For me personally, my favorite moments with pangolins are after doing months and sometimes even up to a year of rehabilitation and then releasing them afterwards and seeing them do well in a natural environment after they've gone through a horrific, traumatizing trafficking and poaching incidents. So getting them back out into the wild, healthy, doing their thing. And for me, getting to see those big milestones when they first establish a nice home range, when they first meet another pangolin and mate, and for like the females, the first time they have a pup after you've released them is very special moments. And just knowing that all that work has paid off and that they're back out in the wild and thriving, it's just one of the best indicators you can possibly see from doing rehabilitation is the animals doing their natural thing and successfully having pups and continuing on the population as much as possible.
So Donald, this is really a species that we're discovering every day, something almost new about them. So when we know so little about a species, it must be quite difficult to quantify success. So what do you see as your successes and what do you hope for the future?
Fortunately, when you don't know much about them, everything's a success. So recently we had a pangolin guardian come across someone who was trying to sell a pangolin on Facebook. And they had done the pangolin guardian's course and they knew what to do and they phoned the pangolin alert number and we got a sting operation together and we saved that pangolin and now it's currently undergoing rehabilitation and will be released back out into the wild. So every little thing like that, every time someone who didn't know what a pangolin was before, but now does know what a pangolin is a success. And for the future, I would love to see a world where, yeah, everyone knows what a pangolin is. And hopefully by that point, they won't be threatened. And we just got to take it step by step. Fundamentally, the problems that face pangolins are all caused by people. And we can also be the solution to that. So we just need to keep doing what we're doing. Yeah.
Donald, tell us a little bit more about Pango Alert. I read about that on your website.
So Pango Alert is a number that you can WhatsApp or call. And if you see a pangolin that's in distress, We will do everything we possibly can to save that animal. Or if people are selling pangolin parts or anything that's illegal and they're not supposed to do, we will get the relevant people and authorities involved. But also, quite importantly, it helps with our research and understanding of pangolins. So we don't know the exact distribution. We don't know everywhere where pangolins are found. They're not confined just to game reserves. They can be outside of protected areas. So someone could potentially come across a pangolin on a farm. And one of the things we can do with Pangolin Alert is anyone can share the location of a pangolin sighting, and the locations are kept secret. But it does help researchers, and it helps us understand where pangolins are being seen. So then that way we can focus law enforcement on specific areas that maybe where they're at risk. And we can also provide support to areas where they're doing well and thriving, and we can bolster those populations and help them out where we can.
I find hope a lot when I hear stories like that, that in fact people are there creating numbers like Pango Alert, where anyone can save a species. And I think sometimes as people living in cities or in areas outside of wilderness areas, I often find that the link is not made directly. And something that I found amazing is to be at the end of the line, to be in the Congo Basin, for instance, and you have this towering rainforest and you have this one tiny little rehabilitated pangolin crawling up, and, you know, people who have donated money, it all came together and they sent a specialist out to try to rehabilitate and try to get this little pangolin back in the wild. And I think that brings enormous hope. And I think something that I like to share with guests is, by supporting ecotourism companies, we're trying to connect the dots all the way from where the funding is coming from to the guys on the ground. And there is amazing work going on. And there's that guy at the end of the line who is making the impact. So it's amazing to hear from you as one of those people spreading hope. But really inspires me. So thank you so much for talking to us today and sharing some of your stories. It is amazing to see where the research is done. You read a lot about things, you know, maybe you donate or maybe you support a place that is, you know, ecologically friendly. But to see what is going on is really what instills a feeling of hope for me.
You can find everything you need to know about Pango Alert through the Pangolin Guardians Program course, or find it on our websites at pangolin.africa.
And Donald, is your Eye of the Pangolin documentary still on that website? Because I really recommend to anyone that's still listening and interested in this animal to take the time to go and watch that documentary. I think it's probably the best that there is out there at the moment, and just gives us this insight into these incredible animals that you're saving and that we've been discussing here today.
Yes, if anyone wants to learn more about pangolins and the threats that they face, and if you've never seen a pangolin in the wild before, so you can find the Eye of the Pangolin documentary on our website and our YouTube channel, and that gives a whole overview of pangolin conservation. And if you've never seen a pangolin before, it's the place to go.
I think we'll try to get something nice up in our conservation rooms as well. But that's definitely something I'm also personally going to be spreading the word about, is this Eye of the Pangolin. It really is a touching film about the threats that they face, but also just their incredibly unique little personalities. Really a special creature. But thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us and inform us. And we'll certainly be in touch again. I know we haven't even touched base with a fraction of all the work that you do, but I hope that people will take from this, go to your website, continue interacting. But thank you so much again for your time. We really, really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on, and thank you everyone for listening. And yeah, special thanks to Sangeeta for so many of your staff members having done the Pangolins Guardian program and become pangolin guardians yourselves and helping spread that awareness throughout the world.
Thank you so much, Donald, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in to another episode of the Sangeeta podcast.
Thank you for listening. If you want to follow other episodes of our podcast series, Safari Conversations, please follow and subscribe wherever you get your podcast from, or on our website at sangeeta.com.